8:03 a.m. on January 25th. Today we have President Senator Giesel and Senator Begich and myself, Chair Hughes. And I would like to remind those in the audience and in the committee to silence your cell phones. And I'd also like to thank the staff assisting us today. We have Nancy Jones with Senate Records. Thank you, Nancy. And Alex Beebe Judice with the LIO, hidden there in the corner. And today we're going to have a presentation on the Alaska Public School funding formula. And we'll be hearing from Mindy Lobaugh. She's the school finance specialist with the Department of Education and Early Development. And as we heard last Friday, the K-12 formula is at about $1.3 billion that is going out. So as Senate Education Committee members, it is something we need to be up on. Because of the size of this line item, I thought it would be important to be able to get into the details and understand it. And I know, and actually I just would like to know, Senator Giesel, have you been in an Education Committee meeting where you've had overviews on the K-12? So she is going to be a little bit more knowledgeable than I will be, and I know Senator Begich is up on education matters as well, so I may have some of the more basic questions. What I'm going to ask at this point during the presentation to members is to hold your questions unless it involves the very detail of understanding the math and the formula itself, so that if you didn't get the question, if you didn't understand something, that would be hard in the rest of the presentation. And I'm setting that ground rule probably mostly for myself, because I want to make sure that I thoroughly understand it, because this is my first presentation on the formula. And so is there anything that the members would like to insert at this point before we bring Mindy up? Okay, come on up, Mindy, and state your name and your affiliation for the record and proceed with your presentation. And while she's preparing, Senator Coghill will be joining us later, and Senator Stevens has another committee hearing at this time, double booked. Back to order. It looks like we have the technical problem worked out. Go ahead.
Good morning, Madam Chair. My name is Mindy Lobaugh. I work for the Department of Education and Early Development. I'm a school finance specialist, too. And our screen disappeared again.
And I will call another. Calling the meeting back to order, and we have called the help desk for those in the audience. Hopefully you'll be able to see the screen, but we do have the presentation before us, so you can go ahead and begin, Mindy.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to start with explaining that the public school funding formula was established with SB 36 in 1998, and it was implemented in 1999. The public school funding formula is defined in Alaska Statutes 1417. And this has been our formula for almost 20 years. Prior to that, we had a categorical funding formula that was approximately 20 years before we changed. Next page, providing an overview. The October count and average daily membership. And I'll be referring to average daily membership as ADM. Then I will cover calculations of adjusted average daily membership. And again, that'll be AADM. Then the calculations of basic need, the funding components of basic need, so who pays, and additional funds above basic need. Next slide. So, average daily membership, ADM reporting requirements. Average daily membership is the number of enrolled students during the 20 school day count period that ends on the fourth Friday in October. And you can see the reference to the law right next to it. And I want to emphasize that that is enrollment, not attendance. So, if a student is absent in the middle of a 20 day count period, they're enrolled, they're still attending, they're still active in the school, so they still count. So that's why we choose enrollment instead of attendance. Reports are due within 2 weeks after the end of the 20 school day count period, and projected student count reports are due on November 5th. The next slide. Who qualifies as a student? So eligibility for state foundation funding, a child who is 6 years of age by September 1st and under the age of 20 and has not completed the 12th grade, or a child who is 5 years of age by September 1st may enter kindergarten. And finally, a child with a disability and an active individualized education plan, or IEP, may attend school if at the age of 3 or if under the age of 22 by July 1st. Next slide. So district adjusted ADM, these are the steps summarized here, and we will have an example. So the first step, we're going to adjust the ADM for school size. Then we're going to apply a district cost factor. Then we will apply special needs factor. We will apply a vocational and technical factor, which is also called CTE. We will add intensive service counts, and we will add correspondence student counts to finally arrive at our district adjusted ADM, which will ultimately calculate the state entitlement.
Mindy, I'm going to ask you to pause for a minute, and I'm going to take an at-ease so the help desk can get us set up. So an at-ease. To order, and thank you, Help Desk, for helping us. And go ahead, Mindy.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And also, I want to mention that Commissioner Michael Johnson from DEED is here. Thank you, Commissioner, for joining us.
Excuse me while I kind of press through the slides and get us to where we left off. Okay. So now we're going to take a look at the school size table. Excuse me. So first, we're looking at communities. So a community with an ADM under 10 is added to the next smallest school within the district with an ADM greater than 10. If there's an ADM of 10 through 100, then grades K through 12, the ADM is combined and adjusted once and adjusted as one school. In a community that has 101 through 425 ADM, for grades K through 6 and 7 through 12, they are adjusted separately. So there will be two adjustments. It will be looked at as two schools. greater than 425, the ADM of each facility is administered separately as one school is adjusted. A good example would be Anchorage, the bigger districts. There are other aspects to adjusting ADM, and that's when we have alternative schools. Alternative schools with an ADM of 175 or greater and administered as a separate facility, the ADM will be adjusted separately, but only based on these three categories. If it is in the first year of service with an ADM between 120 and 175, and it'll receive an adjustment of 1.33. So that school ADM times 1.33 instead of using the school size table. Or second, it has an ADM of 175 or greater in the prior year, but it drops below in the current fiscal year, it will receive the same adjustment of 1.33. Or finally, if its ADM is less than 175 and it remains below, it shall be counted as a part of the school in the district with the highest ADM. Finally, we have charter schools, and if they have an ADM of 150 or greater, they will be adjusted as a separate facility, and that means they will go through the school size table, unless, one, it is the first year of service, they just opened, with an ADM between 75 and 150, it'll receive an adjustment of 1.45, so whatever its count is between those numbers times 1.45. Second, if it has an ADM of 75 or greater in the prior year but drops below this in the current fiscal year, it will receive the same adjustment of 1.45. Excuse me, if it had 175 or greater in the prior year. Sorry, I just wanted to read. And then finally, if the charter school stays below 75 ADM, then it will just receive an adjustment of 1.18, but it does go through independently. So the example that we have selected is Nome because they have a nice mix of schools. We have an elementary school of 380. We're using our 2017 projection for this example. They have a junior-senior high of 255. They have Anvil City Science Academy, which is a charter school, Nome Youth Facility, and they have Extension Correspondence. Their total ADM for this is 719. And so what we are going to do is we're going to look at how the adjustment works when we apply the school size table. So in this case, when we look at the first school, you have an ADM of 380. And what we want to do is look up at the references and see which reference does that fall within. And when you move up, you see that it's actually reference 6. Because the school size is between 250 and 399.99. Now, to calculate this, you would insert the 380 where, under the formula column up above, it shows ADM minus 250. So we insert the 380, we minus the 250, then multiply it by 0.97 and add 326.1, and we arrive at a school size adjustment of 452.2. So, the next one is grade 7 through 12 adjustment. And again, we look up at 255 as the ADM reported. And again, it falls within in reference 6. So, to apply it as we did before, you do 255 minus the 250. Multiplied it by 0.97 and adding it to 326.1 to arrive at 330.95. The reason I am reading this to you almost in a backwards effect to you is if you were to literally sit down and run the number, that is actually the logical way to do it on a 10 key, and you can that way you can arrive at it. So that's why I choose to read it in a backwards fashion. So we have the Anvil Charter School. They have remained below 75, and in this example they have 60. So they just get a flat adjustment times 1.18. So their ADM goes to a school size adjustment of 70.8. the youth facility. All youth facilities are funded on bed count. The bed count they are approved for is 14. And as such, and being 14, you would look up at the references and see that any school between 10 and 19.99 is a flat 39.6. So now that we have school size adjusted all these schools, we're going to add those totals together and arrive at our school size adjusted ADM of 893.55. So we have a hold harmless provision, and this is when districts' count drops and it can be pretty hard on their budget to handle a big drop in the formula. The only way to qualify for the hold harmless provision is to have a decrease of 5% or greater. But to read how the provision is stated, it says the provision was established for those districts experiencing reduction in enrollment. To determine eligibility, the district's sum total of the school size adjustment, which is what we just finished, is compared against the prior fiscal year school size adjustment. And if there's a decrease of 5% or greater between those two, then the hold harmless provision will activate. And the base year becomes their prior year. So if this happened with this example where we're using 2017, and 2016 they triggered it because they were 5% lower in 2017, the 2016 year becomes their base. So as it says, the first year, they'll get 75% of that difference to the base year, which is the 16, and it'll be retained with their 17 adjustment. And I know this is really complicated, so I will do my best to try and make this as clear as I can. Now, what I'm going to do is show you, when you go to the second year, it says a 50% of the difference to the base year is retained. Now, the base year is still 16. So we go to 18, and they're still below that base. We will compare it and take 50% of the difference between those two, and now we've added it to 18. And so on with the third year, provided they're below their base, and it's 25% of the difference to the base year is retained. After that, they should be able to transition into their new lower funding and move forward. I think the biggest struggle that districts have with understanding this is understanding that base year. And that's really key when you're making that calculation. In Nome's case, we did a comparison, and they received a 25%, or the final transition of hold harmless, back in FY 2012. That was the final phase, so the district transitioned out of hold harmless. So in this example, when we did a comparison, we actually found that when 17 was compared to 16, you see that they actually increased in school size adjustment by 15.1, so hold harmless is off the table and not an issue in this calculation. So with that said, where we left off with the school size adjustment of 893.55, we are now going to move forward with the factors in the formula. So the cost factors, the district cost factors, are specific to each school district and range from 1.0, which is Anchorage, and 2.116, which is Yukon Flats. You multiply the school size adjusted ADM by the district cost factor. So for Nome, that is 1.450. Now, at this point, I just want to pause. As you see, it says at the bottom, shown on column P and Q, page 8 of the overview, in your packet should be this document, and it's referring to this document. So the last two pages, you can actually see where Nome sits, and you can see the other districts. So it gives you a complete picture. There's special needs funding, and it includes special education, except for the exception is intensive, vocational education, gifted, talented, and bilingual, bicultural. These are block funded at 20%, and the citation in law is below. So for Nome Public School, we left off after our cost factor. The ADM is increased to 1,295.65, We'll multiply it times 1.2 to get our 20% add-on, which now increases their ADM to 1,554.78. And again, it gives a reference at the bottom of column R on page 8 of the overview. So, vocational and technical funding. I referred to that earlier as CTE, which is career and technical education. It's funded at a factor of 1.015. It is intended to assist districts in providing career and technical education services in grades 7 through 12. This excludes costs associated with administrative expenses and instruction in general literacy, mathematics, and job readiness skills. And the statute is cited below. So now we're going to apply that factor to where we left off and multiply it times 1,554.78 to get 1,578.10. And again, it references page 8 of the overview, column S. Intensive service funding. A school district, will receive funding for intensive service students that are receiving intensive services and enrolled on the last day of the 20-day school count period and meet intensive qualifications for each intensive service student. So intensive service student counts, one student is worth 13 times a standard student. So a multiplier of 13 is used. A cost of a single intensive student generates $77,090. So known public schools had 5 intensive students that they projected, and we're going to take that 5 times 13 to get to 65, and now we're going to add it to our adjusting ADM, and when we do, we arrive at 1,643.10. And again, we just put the references below. The correspondence program. Districts that are offering a correspondence program receive funding based on 90% of the correspondence ADM. Correspondence ADM times 90.90 will equal the funding. They do not get adjusted through the formula. They are picked up at the end for this adjustment. So they didn't go through a school size table and all these adjustments. They are picked up at this point, and we take that number times 90%. So as you see here, the known public school district reported 10 ADM. We just take it times 90%, which is 9. And we add it to where we left off on our school size adjusting ADM to arrive at 1,652.10. And those are shown in the columns B, W, and X on page 8 of the overview. So now we have finally reached our adjusted ADM. I like to look at the formula as kind of two sides to it. The first side is what we just went through, which is the ADM coming in, being adjusted for all factors, and then reaching an adjusted ADM. And now we're going to multiply it times the base student allocation. That is $5,930. So now basic need is, for this district, $9,796,953. This is the amount that should fund their district and help them run a complete year with these schools. So now I'm just going to summarize what we just did. I know it's a lot of information. Sometimes it's nice to see it down a single page. So you can see that they submitted their ADM of 709 and 10 correspondents for 719. We adjusted it for school size. They did not have hold harmless. They had a cost factor of 1.450. We applied the special needs factor. We applied the career and technical education factor. We added in their intensive counts, which were multiplied by 13. We then brought in the correspondence counts that was funded at 90%, calculated at 90%, and we resulted in our final district adjusted ADM multiplied by the base student allocation, or which is also called BSA, And we arrived at the basic need, the $9,796,953. So now that we've established basic need, we want to know who's going to pay this. What components pay basic need? We have required local contribution, we have federal impact aid, and we have state aid. So first we're going to look at the required local contribution, the full and true value, the current year full and true value as provided annually by the state assessor office is multiplied by 2.65 mils for the purpose of calculating the required local effort for foundation funding. So in our example here for 2017, it is the 2015 full value that we will be using. So here we have NOME. It says in our law that the lesser of the equivalent of 2.65 mils of the full and true value, but not to exceed 45% of the school district's prior year basic need. So we have to run both calculations and determine which one of these is the lesser. As you can see, they've both been run, and we have 2.65 mils. Their full value was $366,202,900. We resulted in a calculation of $970,438. Their prior year basic need was $9,946,726. When you take that times 45%, you end up with a higher number of $4.4 million. So we end up using the full and true value of, or the mill rate that was applied, to become the required local effort that will be paid towards basic need. Next, we have federal impact aid payments. It used to be called Title VIII, but with the implementation of Every Student Succeeds Act, or ESSA, it moved it to Title VII. Title VII federal impact aid payments received from March 1st through the last day of February are used as payment for basic need. The state, however, must first deduct out the federal funding for special education, one-fifth of native lands, and construction funds. So with NOME, we received their money and they had a total for that year of $60,026. When we looked at those, they did not have any SPED funding in there or native lands or construction funds, so the state gets to look for calculation purposes at the whole total. So we will come back to that, but there's another aspect to this. So there's an impact aid percentage. It takes the required local contribution and is going to divide it by a budgeted local contribution. So budgeted local contribution for the purposes of calculating impact aid percentage is found in the budgets that are submitted every year on July 15th and may consist of appropriations, investment earnings, in-kind services, and other local. So remember where we left off with required local at $970,438. We pulled up the budgeted local for NOME, and they had $2,304,952 in their budget. So we divided it into the required local to get our impact aid percentage. So now, what we're going to do is we are going to figure out how much impact aid or federal money will we be applying to basic need. So we will take the total amount eligible, which was the $60,000. We're going to multiply it times the 42.10% impact aid percentage. And we also have in our law, 90% is also applied to equal $22,000. 744. And I just would like to point out that with regional educational attendance areas who do not have the ability to give a local, their calculation would not have the 42.10% because they are unable to give a required local. So their eligible amount is applied against 90%, and the state will look at 90% when paying basic need. And again, it gives the references and the page at the bottom. And as you look down that page, wherever you see 100% written on there, it means we are applying 90% against the eligible total. So that can sometimes be helpful when following this part of the formula. So now that we've figured out these components, we have our basic need at $9,796,953. We subtract out the required local effort of $970,438. We remove the impact aid funding, or deduct, excuse me, $22,744. And our final result, which shows us what the state is going to pay for Nome, is the $8,803,771. We would like to point out there are additional funds above basic need, and they're based on additional local contributions and quality schools grant. Now again, this is a comparison, and we run two types of calculations. As it states in our law, the greater of 2 mils of the tax base, or 23% of the district's current year basic need, and state funds calculated on adjusted ADM can be contributed but not exceeded. So what you see here is 2 mils multiplied times the full and true value, and we arrive at $732,406. And when we take 23% of their basic need, which is the $9,796,953, and their quality schools, because it is calculated on an adjusted ADM, which is $26,434, and I will cover quality schools after this. Once you combine those and you multiply it times 23%, you get $2,259,379, and that will be the money that they can contribute above the required local contribution. And it also shows us the maximum amount they can give, or what is sometimes referred to as the cap. So you see, we have the required local contribution that goes towards the formula. We have the additional local contribution that they can give up to, which is the $2,259,379, for a maximum local contribution of $3,229,817. So Quality Schools Grant under AS 1417-480 provides a Quality Schools funding grant of the district's adjusted ADM. It's multiplied by $16, so their adjusted ADM was $1,652.10. And it is times $16 is $26,434. And this grant typically runs for the state about $4 million. And it is above state aid. And with that said, it shows that here we calculated state aid at the $8,803,771 plus quality schools grant, which is above that, the $26,434. And we arrive at our state aid entitlement, which is $8,830,205. And we'd just like to note that the public school funding formula, if the amount appropriated by the legislature is insufficient to meet the total amount, then the basic need will be reduced pro rata. And finally, we added a slide to show you, since we're working on the FY 2018 projection, and that is probably what you're all working off of, that this is a snapshot of the bottom line totals going through the formula. So you kind of have a one-page example in front of you as you move through your process. So hopefully, I'm hoping that will be of assistance. The top shows you the adjusted ADM growing, and then it shows how that is multiplied below by the base student allocation, so we reach our basic need. And then finally, the basic need, we look at how are those components paying for it, and you see the deductions, which arrive at state aid, plus the quality schools amount, and then we finally arrive at our state aid entitlement. So that is the whole formula. I know it's a lot of information, and I'm very happy to take questions, even if you think of them later. I totally understand.
Committee members. Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First, I want to congratulate you. This was very well done. And that last summary page, wow, this was very, very well done. So I have some questions. I have two questions. And the only thing I would say is the slides aren't numbered, which was kind of a, because I made notes. And so I just kind of tabbed back. I'm at correspondence programs. And maybe we don't need to go to that page. Perhaps you can answer the question. It looks like it's funding per correspondence student. Is that true?
Through the chair, Sandra Giesel. It's the average daily membership of correspondence, and it is, so you are, for the most part, correct. It is times 90% of that ADM that they submitted to us. I always like to clarify that because two students can make one ADM. You can have a student that is 0.5 attending part-time there and part-time at a brick-and-mortar. So I always like to clarify that because we're getting an average over 20 days. So, yeah, it's 90% times that ADM they submitted from the beginning.
So, Madam Chair, follow-up?
Continue.
So here's an example. Let's take the Anchorage School District, and there's a student that is homeschooling but is able to, and I don't know if this is still possible, my children actually did this, but enrolled for orchestra in a public school. How would you deal with that?
So in that case, the district would first report the student at the brick-and-mortar school at 0.25 because one course or 1 hour at a school is worth 0.25 of a full-time equivalent. So we're getting kind of going to the next level. So they would do 0.25 of an ADM at the brick-and-mortar, and then they would do 0.75. They do a second reporting of the student at the correspondence school. And now we've got one ADM.
Follow-up, Madam Chair.
Yes, go ahead.
So this 0.75 at a correspondence school assumes that they're in a formal program, like IDEA. What if they were an independent homeschooler? Then is that simply not calculated at all?
So through the chair, Sandra Giesel, that is not calculated at all. We only fund public schools. And through the data they submit, they have to report the school. There's a lot of data, and they report the school number, and we make sure that we only fund public schools.
Madam Chair, follow up on this subject.
Senator Giesel.
So there are schools that are completely correspondence. I think IDEA is one of them. So they're funded through this category right here. How many schools like that are there?
How many correspondence schools?
General estimate.
I know. And actually, what is really helpful is if you want to see the correspondence schools in this document,
okay,
you can. We have a column for that on page 8, column L. And wherever you see a number there, there is a formal correspondence school. It does not mean that all of those are statewide correspondence schools, because we have some of those like IDEA. However, it does show you which districts are utilizing the correspondence process.
Great. Thank you very much. Madam Chair, could I do a follow-up now on a separate subject, a different subject, a different slide?
Yes, but before you do, I just want to, for the record, Senator Coghill has joined us. Go ahead,
My
Senator.
My apologies for being late.
So another question, and this is on the slide that says maximum local contribution, and it's where you arrived at the cap. You said this is otherwise called the cap. So how many school districts reach this cap? How many of them actually make additional local contributions?
So of all the city boroughs that we have that make local contributions, I would have to look that up. I could actually get you a more accurate number spreadsheet on that so you can see.
Okay.
But typically, the ones that I've noticed over the years that pay to the cap, there's probably about a handful of them that do. But I'd like to give you a more accurate view of what that is so you can see who's giving to what level.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. One last follow-up on that.
Yes.
I understand Juneau is one of those communities. Is that accurate?
Through the Chair, Sandra Giesel, I believe that is true.
Okay. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. Are there other questions? Senator Begich.
Thank you. Through the Chair, my first question is, why is Anchorage used as the base?
Through the Chair, Senator Begich. There is a district cost factor study that was done, and it was actually done in the early 2000s, and you have to have a base to create this. I was not the one who ran the study. However, my understanding is they needed to have a base to establish cost of living in different areas and costs of services. However, we do have that report on our website that I could send to you if you'd like to see, but honestly, I would need to give you a more concise response. I would need to go back and pull that, and I could do that for you as well.
More for just to...
Senator Begich, and also Mindy, just all the things that you're offering as far as getting to us, if you could send them to my office and we'll get them to the committee members. Go ahead, Senator Begich.
The reason I'm asking is more for informational purposes so that folks understand why a base is set. And initially when we did our cost factor, Anchorage was always the lowest cost district. And I'm curious if we know if Anchorage is still the lowest cost district.
Lowest cost, through the Chair, Senator Begich, yes, they are still the low at 1.0. And Yukon Flats is the highest.
To the Chair, one follow-up.
That's Senator Begich.
And do we evaluate that on a regular basis, or do we look at like Department of Labor statistics or other statistics to determine that?
Through the Chair, Senator Begich, the last cost study that was done was really the last time we reviewed them, and that was back in 2005 by the Institute of Social and Economic Research, ICER. And since then, those cost factors didn't get completely implemented until FY 2013. We did it over a period of 5 years. And since then, we have not revisited those cost factors.
I appreciate that answer. Thank you. Yeah. Ask an unrelated question?
Well, actually, before you do, I would like to insert something that's related. The base student allocation, that's what you're talking about. Could you give us a really brief overview of when that's been adjusted, what years, and by approximately what I'm...
Yeah.
And actually, having a sheet on that might be helpful for us, too.
Absolutely, Madam Chair. So another good document that I use and keep on my own desk to keep up with all the changes that occur, we have a pencil chart that's available, and it shows the changes in the base student allocation. And I'm more than happy to provide that. The changes that have occurred... since about 2008, we were at 5,380. 2017, we're now at 5,930. So we have increased by, 550. We've increased by $550 since 2008 to the base student allocation. And again, this is a wonderful chart to work with. It also shows monies that have been paid outside the formula.
Okay, thank you. And continue, Senator Begich.
I just had another question. I'm interested in the base student allocation question. Perhaps I'll hold those for later. But you described the 45% on the calculating required local contribution piece, and you described the amount that district contributes. Are there any instances where the 45% is used that you're aware of?
Yeah, through the Chair, Senator Begich, there are three districts that end up with the 45% of prior year basic need, and that's North Slope, Skagway, and Valdez. And I think that's largely due to the pipeline for the first two districts.
And Skagway's case, tourism, I think.
Do you have another question, Senator Begich? Senator Coghill, do you have a question?
Not at this point, thank you.
Okay, I have several questions, and they're somewhat random. Just as you were going through the presentation, I didn't want to interrupt you. You're on a roll, and I do want to thank you. You did a good job.
Thank you.
something so complicated, you made it quite understandable. Wondering about the kindergarten, it used the word may, but are they actually counted as part of the membership, or it's just a school, are they considered as in the count?
Madam Chair, they are considered in the count. I believe the may is inserted in there because they're not required to attend school until the age of six, but they may attend kindergarten at age five. And I think most parents do enroll their students in kindergarten. Yes, we do fund kindergartners.
Okay, I just want to be clear, because a six-year-old, they were counted, and then the five-year-old said may. Is there anything in the formula that disincentivizes schools from merging? Does, in other words, if I have 50 students in one school and 50 students in another, are each of those schools going to overall get more by staying as separate schools rather than merging together?
That is a very good question, Madam Chair. And in some cases, it is. There are incentives, I think, that it benefits them to do that. It all depends on where their counts are at, because as you saw in the school size chart, adjustments vary based on where you fall in that chart. So there's a lot of factors that would depend on, because there's so many aspects like the community, the size of the community, the school. For example, I think what you may be asking or want to understand is that, for example, as you said, 50 here, 50 there. Well, let's say we have 60 and 50. We bring them together, so now we have over 101. So now this K-12 facility that we just brought to 101 is going to get an adjustment here through the formula, that school size table, and here through the 712, and we're going to bring them together. So there is, between 101 and 425, there is an advantage to a community or a district if they can have that much enrollment.
As a follow-up to that, Mindy, I'd ask that you think about that, because considering the fiscal gap that we face and the amount that we're putting towards education, we want to make sure we're not disincentivizing that, especially when there's concern about the smaller schools. So if you could think about that and let me know if there's anything else that we should consider. I was also wondering, my understanding is the $77,000 for the intensive needs students isn't portable, perhaps, the way it was explained to me. In other words, if a student is at a particular school for the beginning of the year and moves to another school, that funding doesn't follow them. Is that correct, or did I get that information?
Madam Chair, if you almost have it. So let's say we have a student that is funded in one district. They were there on the last day of the count period. They're an intensive student. They're getting $77,000 for that student. The student, let's say a month later, moves to a different district. The money will not follow. It will stay in the district that counted the student. So it does not follow the student. If it is within the same district, then it's still staying with the student. But if it goes to a different district, it's not.
Do you know, has there been any history of or discussion about fixing that? It does seem like it needs to be addressed.
Madam Chair, not to my knowledge. However, there has been conversations or questions asked, but that's about it.
Okay, well, we'll kind of chew on that one. Let me look at if any other members have any questions that come up, I'll pause on mine. So, Senator Begich.
Just on the category that Madam Chair has brought up, on the school count category, wasn't the reason for creating eight different categories of school count precisely addressed to adjust, created to address the question of nuances in the size of schools to try to avoid exactly the duplication and the if you will, student hopping or student hunting that districts might do? Wasn't that part of the negotiation, or do you know if it was when we developed the formula. We created 8 very specific categories of population down to 10 or 15 people. And wasn't the whole idea of that to disincentivize abusing the formula?
Through the chair, Senator Begich. I think that's a reasonable assessment.
Madam Chair, the reason I ask is there are 8 specific categories, very, very specific categories. And in the Augenblick study, one of the things that they identified was, if anything, that the Augenblick study, if I may, for the record, was the study commissioned by the Legislative Budget and Audit 2 years ago as a result of increasing the formula. That study, that analysis, indicated that the counts for students in a building or in a structure in a school were actually perhaps too much of a disincentive to the districts and may be unfair. They actually argued that in sort of the opposite answer, that those counts might be made more flexible, and in being more flexible might allow students more variety. That was one of the few flaws that they found in our formula, that instead that they were a positive, they actually may have reduced flexibility a little bit. That's all. So what I'm trying to get at here is we created 8 different categories. Augenblick says maybe we should have even created more categories.
Through the chair, Senator Begich, you're referring to our school size table, I believe.
That's correct.
Okay. Now I'm following.
Oh, sorry.
That's
that.
Right. So, yes, and I agree that I remember that part of the study now, too. Thank you for bringing that up.
And then to the
Senator Begich.
Final follow-up on that. So there are also examples like Juno, which chose, because of a desire to maintain a sports team here that would be competitive at a level, that they chose not to split their school initially for many, many years, you know, because we have to give some local authority to the idea of how we do our schools. It may be based on numbers, or it may be based on other social or community needs, for example, what Juno did. So that would be an example of where a community might choose to keep a larger school structure, even though it might be more beneficial through the formula to cut that school in half and separate
those. Through the chair, Senator Begich, yes, I think that's a reasonable assessment. And actually, I want to point back to your question because ultimately Juno split those into two. I believe you're referring to the high school. They split into 2 high schools. And I believe that works better for the calculations as they go through the formula. So that's I hope that helps a little bit, but that's kind of an example where that occurs. When you have bigger schools like in Anchorage, when you get over 1,000 ADM, that school size adjustment table, which I believe probably this study may have been referring to, the adjustment in the school size table starts to bring them down. And probably when this was being created was the idea that you have your operational costs and everything for the building and the administration and the teachers, and the more population you get, it should only take so much to run that building for all the kids that are within.
Efficiencies of scale.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you. Okay, now I'll continue. I had a question. The VOC and technical adjustment, are most high schools taking advantage of that currently across the state, or is the criteria pretty stiff and not very many are?
Madam Chair, it's not a heavy-handed criteria on them, meaning when we give them the funding, we step back and say local control. With that said, I think the department has been aware that most districts have a career in technical education going on. And now they can just say, yeah, we've applied it now to that. They've got a funding source that can go towards that. So I believe most districts are utilizing this.
Okay, and that's for VOC and technical education. What if a school is using technology at a great degree? Is there any adjustment made for that? In other words, even though they might have a live teacher in the class, they're taking advantage of some kind of virtual education. Is there any adjustment? Does the formula speak to that at all?
Madam Chair, no, it does not. It's covered in the, if I was to point at something, I would say it's covered through that CTE adjustment. However, that's 7 through 12. So
CTE,
given,
what?
Sorry, career technical education. Sorry about that. And however, if it's an elementary, so that you could use the Quality Schools Grant, which, however, is not... is a small grant. But with that said, no, there isn't a specific category or adjustment for technology, is I understand your question.
Okay, and since you are a funding expert, is there anything at the federal level that is available or that there's discussion that might become available for technology use in the schools?
Madam Chair, that's actually a little bit outside my purview. I'm very foundation-driven, so I know we have the impact aid formula, but that might fall under a federal grant specialist that could answer that, and I'm happy to put that question towards them to find out.
Thank you, and we'll be exploring more of that and have other opportunity. I just thought I'd check with it.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Coghill.
Thank you, and I think that is a question that... That's a flexibility point that has huge impact on some smaller districts, and we need to have a categorization, because in a town like mine where we have military bases, that's one method of looking at it, and then you have some places where they're surrounded by federal areas, that's another way of looking at it, and I think we need to have a good mental grasp of what that whole scope is.
Mm-hmm.
So, because that's a flex point that has huge impacts on local contribution issues. So try to get some information, at least a scope for us, I think. That'd be helpful to us.
Another question, moving in, I only have a couple more, and that is my understanding is that the formula was adjusted, and I can't tell you what year, the topic of teacher recruitment retention in the rural areas came up, and that there was a need to adjust the formula to make sure that we could provide salaries that might draw teachers to those districts and keep them there. And yet, anecdotally, at least, I'm understanding that we still have a pretty serious problem with teacher recruitment retention. Do you know what that adjustment was, and have you tracked that at all in relation to retention of the teachers?
Madam Chair, no. I don't have the... information on teacher retention.
Okay, thank you. The hold harmless provision, we do have migration happening around the state, and I don't know if MATSU, my understanding, MATSU might be the only district that's growing, or at least pretty rapidly. Is there anything to accommodate a district that's rapidly growing? Anything in the formula? I don't think there is. There is if it's decreasing, but I believe we're growing at about a school building per year.
Madam Chair, the only thing that speaks to that would be the school, you know, all the school size adjustments that they can get, and hopefully that's accommodating the size of each school that is opening in MATSU.
Right. It's just that I think it's the pace. I think it's sometimes it's hard for them to keep up even with the planning and the preparation and moving towards making sure that they have we have the number of classrooms that are needed. Is there anything else that any members? Senator Bekich.
Through the chair. Mindy, if you know, one of the things that I have this obsessive habit of looking at Department of Labor stats and things like that, mm-hmm. and cost of living stats, and it's actually the growth in MATSU is one of the reasons I brought up the base student allocation issue. If we were to, say, for example, open the formula, which some people have discussed, and take another look at cost differentials, and MATSU were to be the base now because their costs for delivering education there are cheaper, what impact would that have on, say, the amount of money that would be potentially provided to Anchorage, which is has a substantially large district, and how would that potentially impact, if Anchorage had to have an adjustment for differential if it were no longer the base, an adjustment up for differential? What potential, hypothetically, what potential impact would it have?
Through the chair, Senator Bekich, I actually don't think I can speak to that. That's I think the cost study would be the best way to to look at that and see. I think the AIR, I'm using an acronym. The first cost study we did, I think, put MATSU at the base, as the base.
The base.
Yeah. So we have those publications, and that would be something that would be really helpful.
Could I,
Senator Beckage?
Can we get a copy of that? And then, mm-hmm. and then the other thing, and just going back to the Augenblick study, you know, I mean, I read that thoroughly and went to or watched the presentation when they presented to the legislature, legislative budget and audit, their findings, and then went back through it again last year, in early part of the year. And when I went through that study over and over again, Augenblick identified that we had one of the, frankly, in their minds, and Augenblick, for the record, is a company based out of Colorado. There was a search done. They applied for the grant funds to do this research and were approved by LBNA back in, I believe it's 2014. But they concluded over and over again that we had one of the fairest and most well-adjusted foundation formulas in the country. They identified three areas of concern, however. One was that we showed direct impact of funding and an impact on educational outcomes, we seem to be underfunding special needs, underfunding poverty, and underfunding minority populations. All three, do you recall those, or is that a question I should direct to the commissioner or direct to the deputy commissioner? Do you recall those findings? I recall those, and I took notes at the time, but I'm wondering if you recall those.
Through the chair, Senator Beckage, I don't recall those findings.
Could I ask if...
Senator Beckage?
If the commissioner or the, or do either of you recall?
Commissioner, if you have a response, you can come to the table, please.
I bring this up, Madam Chair, because if that's true, and the Augenblick, I actually thought that their work was pretty thorough. I think they made some non-Alaskan-based adjustments that we should all look at, you know, that need to be looked at. But if it's true, it begs the question as to whether or not we are providing enough resources for those of our students who are special needs students, students in poverty, Title I students, those kinds of folks. And that might be worth knowing more about.
Commissioner.
For the record, I'm Michael Johnson, Commissioner of Education and Early Development. Through the chair, Senator Beckage, it's been quite some time since I've read the study, but your three items that you mentioned strike me as being correct. But I would want to go back and look in the study and make sure that those three are the three that were mentioned, or if there's more or less, and we can do that.
Okay, and then my final question.
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You mentioned teacher retention, and if I recall correctly, teacher retention wasn't so much a part of the formula as it was part of the Moore lawsuit. That was one of the factors in the Moore lawsuit that led to a settlement with the Department of Education and the state. And in the Moore lawsuit, teacher retention was identified by the court as a critical component in providing a constitutional and adequate education for Alaskans. And so not so much a part of the formula as something that the department was directed to examine and address to some degree. Is that correct, Commissioner?
Through the chair, Senator Beckage, yes, it is. And it's one of the five priorities that the governor outlined in the State of the State address that we are going to be looking at as a priority. And I would add not just teacher retention, but also principal retention, superintendent retention.
Madam Chair, on that point.
Senator Coghill.
I don't know that we need to do it right now, but I think a good point, Senator Beckage, is we should probably have a template to look at what court cases and what consent decrees we have to follow or have agreed to follow over the spread of this formula, because they have such a huge impact. So there's probably more than one, and there's probably more than several items that are specifically said. So before we start talking about policy tweaks, we really need to take a look at those consent decrees that we're now under. So,
Good point. Thank you, Senator Coghill. And I'll just clarify, you're right about the Moore lawsuit, but the teacher recruitment retention discussion was part of when, the revisions and whether there was a particular factor, but it did weigh into the making sure the rural schools had enough. And if it isn't particularly working, and we'll be talking about teacher recruitment and retention later, that's something that we need to know. So
thank you for that correction, Madam Chair.
Are there other questions? Do you have any final comments, Commissioner or Mindy?
No, Madam Chair. Thank you for the opportunity to present, however. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for a great presentation.
Yes. And Commissioner?
Nothing.
And because it is complex, I welcome committee members, if something arises that comes to mind, we can certainly, I'm sure, contact the department. They'd be happy to help us. I see heads nodding. So with that, we're going to bring this meeting to a close. And our next meeting will be Friday at 8 a.m., and we will be establishing the baseline for where we stand with broadband access across the state, and we'll be hearing from GCI, ACS, and MTA about infrastructure with a particular focus on the rural schools and what might be needed if we were going to expand technology opportunities across the state. And I'm excited about that hearing, and I look forward to seeing you all then. And with that, we will adjourn at 9:10.